Book of Acts. I'd like you to open up to Acts chapter 19. And I'm going to ask for audience participation today. Most of what we've been doing here in the Acts class has been lectureship style. I'm going to tell you that I don't feel as prepared to teach this as I'd like to. I like to be able to just roll right through my notes without having to look at them. But I'm going to ask you to read, and I'm going to do that so that I have opportunity to look at what it was I wanted to say. But we're going to just kind of go through verse by verse, take a few verses at a time, talk about those things, and then move on. If there's something that you notice in that verse that you would like to discuss, please feel free to raise your hand, and we'll do the best we can to answer those questions. So what I would like is for someone to volunteer, and I'm going to ask for volunteers at first, and when the volunteers start wimping out on me, then I'll just start calling names. Can I have somebody read verses 21 and 22, nice and loud? Of chapter 19, yes. Thank you. Did everybody hear that? I learned a very important lesson from Jerry Bassett. When you're teaching a class and you're glancing through your scriptures and you see names that you don't know if you can pronounce, just get a volunteer. So when I volunteer to read, it'll be all easy names. So verse 22, it says, when these things were accomplished, what things had been accomplished? Let's just do a quick review. What things had been accomplished? Those of you who were here last week. I know we blew through this stuff pretty fast, but what was going on in the early part of chapter 19? Okay, so he's getting started. All right. So let's just back up and look at Acts chapter 19, verses 11, and we'll read there for a little bit. Now, God worked unusual miracles by the hands of Paul, so that even handkerchiefs or aprons were brought from his body to the sick. And the diseases left them, and the evil spirits went out of them. Then some of the, this is one of those words I should have let somebody else read, itinerant Jewish exorcists took it upon themselves to call upon the name of the Lord Jesus over those who had evil spirits, saying, we exorcise you by Jesus whom Paul preaches. Also there were seven sons of Sceva, a Jewish chief priest who did so. And the evil spirits answered and said, Jesus I know, and Paul I know, but who are you? Then the man in whom the evil spirits leaped upon them, overpowered them, and prevailed against them, so they fled out of the house naked and wounded. This became known to both all Jews and Greeks dwelling in Ephesus. And fear fell on them, and the name of the Lord Jesus was magnified. And many who had believed came confessing and telling their deeds. Also, many of those who had practiced magic brought their books together and burned them in the sight of all. And they counted up the value of them, and it totaled 50,000 pieces of silver. So the word of the Lord grew mightily and prevailed. So what had happened? The word grew. Okay? They had these practices. They had all kinds of things going on. They had these magicians, people who practiced magic, people who did all kinds of things, some for money, some for power, some for prestige. These people are being taught, aren't they? They're changing their ways. So we start out just with, Paul has reached a point where he's accomplished this in this place. It's time to move on. So from there, Paul purposed to go from Ephesus to Macedonia, then Achaia, then to Jerusalem. And after that, he planned to go to Rome. When he arrived in Achaia, later on his third journey, so we'll read about that in a little while, it's believed that he wrote the book of Romans from Corinth, and that's about 57, 58 A.D. If we turn over to Romans, chapter 1, verses 9 through 13, Romans chapter 1, verses 9 through 13 also expressed Paul's desire. Paul really wanted to get back to Rome. Chapter 1, 9 through 13. For God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers, making request, if by some means now at last I may find my way in the will of God to come to you. For I long to see you, that I may impart you some spiritual gifts, so that you may be established. That is, that I may be encouraged together with you by the mutual faith both of you and me. Now I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that I often planned to come to you, but was hindered until now, that I might have some fruit among you also, just among the other Gentiles. In verse 11 it says, for I have longed that I may impart to you some spiritual gifts, that you may be established. What does that mean? Anybody? Okay, so they may be strengthened. What kind of spiritual gifts is he wanting to impart to them, Carol?
Well, spiritual gifts, gifts of tongue, gifts of prophecy, gifts of understanding, and those gifts empower the word that it is coming from God, so that it's not just the word of somebody else. It is a miracle, a miraculous thing.
Okay, so how is he going to do that? What does he have to do? He's got to lay hands on, doesn't he? Okay, so what we can read into from that is that these individuals in the church in Rome have not had the apostles' hands laid upon them, have not been given that power of the Holy Spirit to perform miracles, to speak the words that the Holy Spirit would have them to speak. They're a church, much like us, but this being established is being so grounded and so confident. Okay, when we study, so I'm up here, I'm stuttering, I'm stammering, I'm a little bit nervous, I'm sweating a bit. Why is that? Okay? I have to rely on what when I'm up here? Me. And the limited amount of studying that I did and the three commentaries that I read, I have to rely on me, don't I? And that's what these individuals in Rome at this time are having to do. They're having to rely on the words that were given to them. How much easier would it be for me to stand up here if the words just came into my head? If I could stand here boldly and confidently speaking to you what I know the Holy Spirit wants me to speak. That's what Paul is longing to do. He loves these brethren. He wants to give them that strength and that encouragement. I'm stepping on this cord right here. It's kind of under the carpet. It's making me fear I'm going to trip. So that's Paul's desire. That was what Paul's desire was. As he is getting to the end of his third journey, or starting into his third journey, he knows, and we're going to read, but he knows that his time is coming to an end, doesn't it? Okay, so it says in verse 22 that Paul sent Timothy and Aratus on ahead. So he's alone at this time, or he doesn't have those individuals with him. It's generally believed that the letter of 1 Corinthians was written about this time. Okay, while Paul was in Ephesus. And it was sent out after Timothy had left. So Timothy's gone now. Timothy's moved on. If we turn over to the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 16, we'll just take a look at that real quick. So 1 Corinthians 16 verses 8 through 11, it just says there, but I will tarry in Ephesus until Pentecost, for a great and effective door has opened to me, and there are many adversaries. And if Timothy comes, see that he may be with you without fear, for he does the work of the Lord as I do. Therefore, let no one despise him, but send him on his journey in peace, that he may come to me, for I am waiting for him with the brethren. So, Paul is staying. Why did Paul stay in Ephesus? It says there in Corinthians. Why did he stay? Yeah, what's that mean?
More teaching, more being able to spread the gospel, edifying other people, help
him. Yeah, what has just happened? All of these witches and wizards, if that's the term that you want to use, have brought their books and they've burned them, haven't they? Now, Paul could say, well, good job, guys, and off he goes, or he could take that time and that opportunity to teach those individuals, couldn't he? So he has this great door, this great opportunity that has presented itself to him, and so he's not willing to move on from that. Can we take a lesson from that? How many of us are busy? I'm busy. I'm busy all the time. Have we ever passed up on an opportunity that's presented itself to us? Because we're in a big hurry? So when I study, I'm kind of a so what kind of guy. So we all understand that the scriptures are there, and you know they're all given for our inspiration. But I like to ask on a regular basis, so what? Why am I reading this? What's the point? And what we want to do from time to time is to say that. You know, so Paul has sent these people on, and he stayed because this work presents itself. Now we know that Paul desires to do what? Go to Rome. He has an end game, doesn't he? He has some place he wants to be. But what does he do? He stays. Yes. Sometimes in our lives, we need to maybe not make it to that game or that restaurant or that activity because an opportunity has presented itself to us and we need to take advantage of that opportunity. Carol. Exactly. Did you guys hear the word that she used, tipping point? That's a book that we studied in our reading class. And it's actually a book that I plan on purchasing myself and that all of us should look at. And what it is a scientific study of how different things influence large groups of people. And we studied very worldly things. We studied the trend of hush-hushy shoes. How quickly those became a worldwide phenomenon based on the impact of a very small community. The tipping point is another way that science is proving the effectiveness of the gospel in the fact that one person in this room, by changing their attitude out in the world and making a difference, can infect all those people around them. So, Paul has reached this tipping point, if you will. Paul has infected the people in that region. They are making a change. Paul could up and leave to fulfill his agenda, or he could stay there and continue to ground these individuals. And I did not look this verse up, and I'm going to ask somebody to help me. But it's a verse, and I can't even quote it all the way, talking about when we cleanse our house of the demons. Bruce knows where it's at. I find not. And yet, we don't fill that house back up with good things. What happens? More demons come, don't they? Okay? So, when I start to work with Ron, I've introduced Ron to the gospel. I'm trying to change Ron's life. And I say, well, there you go. I baptized you. Next. And I just walk away from him. I don't help to ground him and help to teach him to grow. And he doesn't have that support group. What do you suppose is going to be the outcome? He's going to struggle, isn't he?
Struggle worse than before.
A lot of times. And why is that? Yes. And we see that so many times with young people. I coach soccer. Most of you know that. I use soccer as a reference all the time. But we've got some young people on our soccer team, and we're trying to impress upon them that their activities in life are not good. And we're planning on punishing them very severely because not only are they doing dumb things, they're dumb enough to post them on Facebook and social media. So they're not a secret. And so Kirsten, who coaches with me, is really good about having one-on-ones with these individuals and talking with them and teaching them. And when they're talking to her, oh, she's such an inspiration. But then when she steps away because she's got 45 other kids to deal with, what do? They are drawn back to those friends, those bad people. So these individuals that have given up their magic books, who have given up their worldly ways, their idolatry, if they are not continuing to be taught at this time, what is the odds? It's not good, is it? Does that place a burden on you? It does on me. It places a burden on me to pay attention to the people in my life and that I'm affecting. And to make sure that it's not just a one-time affecting. Okay, so we are going to skip the next reading, but we're going to paraphrase it because I'm rambling and I'm going to run out of time. In chapter 19, 23 through 41, we read of a man named Demetrius. And what is it that, first of all, let's just look at verse 23 really quick. Verse 23 says, "And about that time there arose a great commotion about the way." What's the way?
The gospel.
Okay. And we can go back and look at Acts 9:2, Acts 16:7, and just confirm that. We're not going to take the time to do that. But whenever we're reading about the way, we are reading about the gospel being spread, the way of Christ, the things that the apostles are teaching. Okay? And this way is disrupting the lives of certain individuals. So from Acts 23 through 41, we're going to read about a situation that has arose in which the silversmiths and craftsmen are upset. Why are they upset? Does anybody know that story? Carol?
They're losing money because the way is preaching against the gods and goddesses that they've been making idols for.
Okay, and one in particular is the goddess Diana, okay, or Artemis. She's referred to as the mother goddess. And they have this great statue, and this mother goddess has these arms that are opened up welcoming you in. And it is a statue of a female with multiple breasts, meaning that she is the mother of all who will come to her. And there's all kinds of practices that go on in the service of Diana. They have prostitutes in the temple. They've got all kinds of things going on. But these silversmiths are making these images of this goddess, and they're considered to be like a good luck charm, like a rabbit's foot. And they're selling those. And here comes these apostles, and they start teaching. Okay, can we remember what chapter it was when Paul talks about the unknown God and the service of idols? Anybody remember that off the top of your head? Yep, it is in Acts chapter 17, verses 22 through 31. Let's just flip over there really quick. Okay, and we're not going to read all the way down through that, but I just want you to make a mental note of where that's at in your Bibles. I do that a lot. I cannot quote verse by verse, but I can find things based on where it's at on the page in my Bible. So just make that mental note. But Paul is traveling through this region, and he sees all of these idols and all of these statues to gods. And what does he do? He preaches to them about the one statue that got to the unknown God. That's the God I want to talk to you about, not all of these other gods. And so it starts there in Acts chapter 17, and he is impressing upon these people that worshiping idols is bad. And that gets into their pocketbook, doesn't it? And isn't that something that affects the world today? There are so many people out there that are about the dollar, aren't they? And when something new comes up, that might interfere with their making of a dollar, what do? It's easier to try to undermine that product than it is to try to make a better product, isn't it? So these silversmiths, they get together and they start this riot. And it becomes such a riot. They pour into the temple or the meeting place, and they are screaming and they are chanting for 2 hours, "Great is the goddess Diana, great is the goddess Diana." And what I think is interesting about this is all these people ran together. But we can read, most of them didn't even know why they were there. They were confused. Some were yelling this, some were yelling this. And it just became this scene of chaos, this mob mentality. Have we ever gotten caught up in that? You ever known somebody in your life that had an interaction with somebody and there was conflict? And because you're friends, you just jumped on that bandwagon? Done it? Right? We just jump right in. We're kind of... It's a pretty good analogy to call sheep. What kind of followers? What kind of group oriented? We like to be huddled together. And so when one of our friends is upset, excited about things, we jump right in that building. I got your back, man. Well, these people saw this uproar. These silversmiths are saying, not only are they hurting our pocketbooks, but they're going to want to destroy our temple. And all of a sudden, we got this big uproar. The Jews, who are present, got concerned. They got concerned for a couple of reasons. But they tried to get up and use this opportunity to reason with the crowd. And they put forth an individual named Alexander. And he stepped before them. He's a prominent member of the Jewish society. And he stands up and he's wanting to talk to these individuals. "Men and brethren, I need you to listen to me." And what happens? They looked up and went, "That guy's a Jew." And that incited them even more. Why is that?
It's sacred.
Yeah. Do the Jews believe in idolatry? They're not supposed to. They have. But the Gentile world views the Jews as looking down upon them, don't they? As looking down upon them because they serve idols. Go ahead, Carol. Yeah. They see the Jewish people as just as much of a threat as Paul. Now, why do the Jews want to quiet the crowd? Well, one, they want to use that crowd to their advantage, don't they? Let's fire them up against this Paul. Let's let them know, you know what, we're not against your goddess Diana. We're just against what Paul's doing over here. But the Jews, by definition, being a people who are supposed to be following God, a God that preaches against idolatry, these individuals see them as against them. And it takes the town clerk, if you will, to quiet this group of people. Why would he be so concerned about quieting them? Exactly. So they're under Rome rule. They're under Rome rule, and they have this riot going on, and it has been going on for a couple of hours now. Now, I'm sure that it takes a little while back then for things to get from point A to point B as far as information goes. But if this goes on and the Roman leaders take notice, what's going to happen?
They're going to move in.
Yeah. What's the punishment for inciting a riot?
Prison.
Death. So this clerk... who is, when we think of the word clerk, we don't really think of somebody that's in power, do we? Okay, here, this individual is extremely high in power. Who's going to get in trouble first? Yeah, these leaders, aren't they? For allowing this riot to go on. So, they swell the riot. But we're going to see evidence of this later on, if we get there. So, then we're going to drop down to chapter 20. And let's just read chapter 20, verses 1 through 6. Can I have a volunteer for that? Somebody that can go nice and loud. I want one of these ladies that sat through that class to volunteer and show me that you can read loud. None of you? Marie?
I'm reading from the New American Standard. After the uproar had ceased, Paul sent for the disciples, and when he had exhorted them and taken his leave of them, he left to go to Macedonia. When he had gone through these districts and had given them much exhortation, he came to Greece. And there he spent 3 months. And when a plot was formed against him by the Jews, as he was about to set sail for Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia. And he was accompanied by Sopater of Berea, the son of Pyrrhus, and by Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy, and Tychicus, and Trophimus of Asia. But these had gone on ahead and were waiting for us at Troas. We sailed to Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came to them at Troas within 5 days, and there we stayed 7 days.
All right, thank you. Good job. Good volume. Did everybody hear that? Okay. All right, so it starts out that after this uproar has ceased. Now, just real quick, what did Paul want to do while this riot was going on? Well, that's what I would want to do. If I caused you guys a riot, I've got an exit to my right and my left. I've got some up here behind. I have an exit strategy. I'm out of here. What did Paul want to do when he heard that people were speaking against him?
He wanted to go into the people.
Yeah. He wanted to go into the people. Is that our tendency? So I caused an uproar. I upset some people. What's my tendency? Yeah. Well, I'll just wait until that calms down. Or they forget about it, because we all have a short attention span, right? We'll just wait until it blows over. Or even better yet, we'll wait until somebody else makes them mad, then we'll forget about it. That's how we do things today. Okay, Paul wants to go. Now, what do you think Paul thought might happen to him if he went? Yeah. What happened to Stephen when there was a big uproar? Yeah. Where was Paul and Stephen that summer?
Holding
coats. Think that's in the back of his mind? And yet, what does he want to do? His job. He wants to go in and speak to those people and defend the gospel. And it's his constituents that talk him out of it. So, what is Paul doing on this journey? Yeah, so it says, verse 2, now when he had gone over that region, so he's going back around to all the congregations that he's been to, all the churches, when he had gone over that region and encouraged them with many words, he came to Greece. So what kinds of things do you suppose he's doing with these many words? We read about it in chapter 14, verse 22. It says, he strengthened the souls of the disciples, exhorting. I'm having a lot of trouble. When I look out there and then I come back to my words are moving on my Bible. So he strengthened the souls of the disciples, exhorting them to continue in the faith and saying, we must, through many tribulations, enter the kingdom of heaven. So again, goes back to that wanting to stay with people. He's going back around and he's reconfirming that these individuals are on the right track and that they understand, yet because they've been at it long enough. You know, we read these journeys, 28 chapters in the book of Acts, and we kind of just fly through it sometimes. But we got to realize the years that transpire between these visits. And while these apostles are not with these churches, do you think it's all sunshine and roses? It's one thing to step back and allow a church to do what it's doing when there's a man up front that can perform miracles. That's intimidating, isn't it? Because if he can perform miracles, what else can he do? He can probably defend that congregation. But when those apostles step away, now we've got our elders that have had their hands laid on them, but we don't have these apostles there, do we? So they're going to face trials and tribulations. They're going to have individuals starting to question. We've read just last week about the letters that Paul was carrying, because these individuals were coming through and saying, no, you Gentiles need to be circumcised. So all kinds of things can cause problems. Paul is going back through and he's confirming all of these churches. He's getting them back on the right track. He's getting them straightened out. He's letting them know that they aren't forgotten. That's important to us, isn't it? How long did he stay in Greece? 3 months. And what changed his plan? He was going to sail to Syria. Why did he change his plans? Okay? Which is interesting. Here, just a few verses ago, Paul is willing to go into this riot and put himself in harm's way. Now, today, he is changing his travel plans because the Jews are plotting against him. What changes there? Okay, there's that. Definitely. Okay, we have to remember, Paul has an endgame, doesn't he? Okay? Paul has time to plan his trip, to make decisions, yes, no, maybe. When this riot was going on, what is that? That's heat of the moment, isn't it? That's right now. Here's this conflict. Here's this situation that has arose. I'm being accused. The gospel is being accused. I need to step forth and defend that gospel. Okay? Here, it's just not prudent for him to jump on that ship when he knows that people are planning on killing him. That defeats his end game, doesn't it? Okay. There isn't anywhere to run on a ship. Around in circles. That's about it. Okay. I got to look at something really quick here. In verse 4, these individuals, Marie read it better than I'm going to. Chapter 20, verse 4, and so Sopater of Berea accompanied him to Asia and also Articus, or however you say it. Larry says to just go on when you say it wrong. All of these individuals, why are they with Paul? What are they doing? What's their purpose? Just company? Okay. What else? Okay. Can somebody turn over to Romans chapter 15? Romans chapter 15, starting at verse 25. Volunteer. Vicky. Nope, through the end of the chapter. Yes, ma'am. Nice and loud. With enthusiasm. You can stop there. So, who are these individuals again? Yeah, these are men from the different churches, the different regions, that have gathered together goods and monies for what? For the saints in Jerusalem. Why do the saints in Jerusalem need this help? Okay, huge famine. What else is coming up? Pentecost. What happened on Pentecost? Lots of people came in. Back in Acts, the beginning of Acts, what happened on Pentecost? Lots of people came in and what?
Stayed.
Do you think that might create a need? So let's say that Larry's fame spreads and we pack this place. People are coming from Washington. I'll use Washington because we're full of Washingtonians. They come from Washington and they come down here and they listen to him and they're just like, this guy's And so they just quit their jobs and here they are. And eventually Bill and Kathleen are going to run out of room and going to run out of food and they're not going to be able to house and feed everybody. And so whose burden is that going to become? Ours. Is burden the right word? There we go. So, but one of the commentaries that I read said Paul had these individuals coming. One, Paul's not going to carry all this stuff. And two, what was Paul always worried about? We'll read about it later if we're not going to get there. I'm pretty sure Larry's going to fire me, which I can't say isn't part of my plan, because we're not going to make it to 21. But what kinds of things would Paul be worried about when he has all this money and stuff? Robberies. If we turn over to, Rossi, we'll get there in just a second. Let's just go there. So keep that question in your mind. Let me flip the notes here. Just real quick, let's drop down. So 7, we'll start reading at 7, and I'm going to go ahead and read that because we're running out of time. So, and I am reading out of the New King James. Now on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul, ready to depart the next day, spoke to them and continued his message until midnight. What is meant by that term, breaking bread? Larry talked about this just a little while ago. Is that supper? It's the Lord's Supper. Okay, and the reason I ask that question is because let's look down at verse 11. Now when they had come up, so we'll just read down to verse 11 so that we get all the context. Until midnight, there were many lamps in the upper room where they were gathered together. And in the window, a certain young man named Eutychus was sinking into a deep sleep. He was overcome by sleep, and as Paul continued to speak, he fell down from the third story window and was taken up dead. But Paul went down and fell on him and embraced him. Embracing him said, "Do not trouble yourselves, for his life is in him." Now when he had come up and broken bread and eaten and talked a long while, even till daybreak, he departed. Verse 11, what kind of breaking bread is that? It's a meal. How do we know the difference? Okay. So they came together on the first day of the week. Paul spoke till midnight. Eutychus falls asleep and falls out the window sometime around that time. The way I'm reading it, I didn't get anywhere close. I'm going to tell Larry it was all your guys' fault. Carol wouldn't shut up. Paul. Mm-hmm. So, this is a study, there's just two ways that context is being used. And we can look back over in Acts chapter 2, verse 42, where it's dealing with the spiritual breaking of bread, okay, which we can assume if we keep it all in context, they gathered on the first day of the week and they broke bread. Then we move to Acts chapter 2:46, where it's talking about them coming together house to house, breaking bread. So that's an eating of a meal. And I didn't look at the Greek terms and the Hebrew terms, but when dealing with the term breaking bread, as in the Lord's Supper, the definitions and the terms for having a meal, for the taste of the food, for the smell of the food, all of those types of things are not the issue. Okay? I'm sure Larry will come back and recount this. Why do we only partake of the Lord's Supper on Sunday, first day of the week? That's the only example we have, isn't it? Okay, in 2 Corinthians 5:7 says we walk by faith, not by sight. So in other words, I don't make my own decisions on how to please God. I walk by faith. In Romans 10:17 it says faith comes by hearing the word. So we don't make this stuff up. But those are questions that you're going to be asked, and we don't have time to expound on it very much, but that's something, you know, ground yourself in. Be able to answer that question. Because we've had members of our own congregation that wanted to discount the meaning of this meal and say that we should be coming together and having this grand feast, and that's the fellowship that partakes. No, it's not. We've got to be able to answer those questions, because you're going to be answered. When we studied this in the high school class, one of the things that we talked about on a regular basis was the fact that the reason we study this book of Acts is it gives us all this information to be able to deal with the questions of the world and to be able to teach people that are out there, but we can't teach them if we don't have the answers. Turn over here. In Ephesus, Paul calls together verse 17. From Miletus, he sent to Ephesus and called for the elders of the church. So from there down to verse 25, Paul is calling together these elders and he's talking to them and he's letting them know, I'm probably not going to see you again. Okay? That's his first message. And then he lets them know, I have not ceased to teach you and to worry about you, and I have held nothing back from you. So Paul has given them all of the information that they need to be successful, hasn't he? He's held nothing back. In verse 26 through 27, Paul has just let them know, you know, I've testified to the Jews, I've also to the Greeks, I've held nothing back. Verse 26 and verse 27, it says, therefore I testify to you this day that I am innocent of the blood of all men. How is he innocent of the blood of all men? He just said it, didn't he? I've held nothing back. I have gone forth and I have taught, I have spent my whole life warning you, exhorting you, putting myself in danger for you. Do you know in the Old Testament where that, what that's referring to, that being innocent of all men's blood? You may be familiar with Ezekiel 33, 1 through 9, where it talks about, and we'll end on this because this is something that I want us to think about. You set a man to watch for the sword, for the coming enemy. And that man sees the enemy coming and he blows the trumpet and tells the whole city, the enemy is coming, you need to get up and you need to flee or you need to get ready to fight. And they ignore his words. And he flees, he's innocent of their blood. But if he stands and he looks out at the world and he sees, here comes this enemy, and he thinks, I don't have time to tell them, they're on their own. And off he goes and he doesn't flee. Their blood is on his hands. How do we translate that to us? If we see the world lost without God, and we do not warn them, then we can't stand boldly in judgment as Paul is going to be able to and say, my hands are clean. That's a huge burden, isn't it? That's something to think about each and every day. So if we don't take away anything else from this lesson, let's ask ourselves, are we able to say at the end of the day, that my hands are clean. Thank you very much for your help and your participation. Larry will be back.